All right, how's everybody doing? Welcome to Friday. It is Friday in Chicago. It looks nice outside, but I know there's a cold wind. So hopefully everybody gets out, stays away from each other, uses hand sanitizer, all that fun stuff here. Episode 30, I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com. This is Chicago Music Revealed. And always like to preface, I'm also the program director at the Epiphany Center for the Arts. We will be opening maybe some pop-up shows in the summer, hopefully. And then September, we're going to hit it. And hopefully we will be back seeing everyone live in clubs, actually being near each other rather than social distancing and being digitally connected. But the good news is being digitally connected helps out a little bit because I can do some incredible interviews. And that is going to happen today because it is a pleasure to welcome on, and I'm going to bring him on right now, blues legend John Primer is here. John, thanks so much for taking a few minutes here on Friday where we get to plug some of the different things you have going on. But first off, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. So far, I'm doing good. Yeah. I feel good. And along with all the program, everything going on, you know. Hope it pass over soon. That's all.
Yeah, no kidding, right? No kidding. Now, before we get into some of the stuff that I want to talk to you about, I know that you've got a new CD that just came out May 1st. So let's talk about that. It's available on johnprimerblues.com. And the name of the release is The Gypsy Woman Told Me. That's an interesting title. And that just came out. So talk a little bit about that. That's with a longtime collaborator of yours, isn't it, with Bob?
Yeah, a long time. Yeah, we did a few CDs together, you know, and we've been friends for a long time. Yeah, so you know, we made good connection.
What's the significance of the title? That's an interesting title.
You know, it's an old Muddy Waters tune. You know, the Gypsy Woman told me. Yeah, I think one of Willie Dixon's songs wrote it up, but Muddy, I always sing it all the time. You know, one of my songs. Yeah, so. So we decided to name it that's what he's going to name the CD. So that's a good name for it.
No, it's a great name for it. But, you know, you brought up a great thing, and I want to get into your history a little bit, too. But before we do that, outside of the new release you have, you also have joined the digital world, just like everybody else in the music industry, out of necessity probably more than anything else. And you're doing some live streams. You're doing a regular live stream called John Primer Down in the Basement. Those are Sundays at 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. on your Facebook page. And then also this Saturday, tomorrow, you're also going to join in on the Facebook stream of Can't Stop the Blues. You got a meet and greet at 8:30 Eastern Time. And then you're set. You're going to do 9 o'clock Eastern Time. That's on Facebook of Can't Stop the Blues. Have you ever... I mean, first of all, nobody's ever gone through this situation before. So, I mean, this is all brand new to all of us, you know, lucky us. But have you ever done this much connecting on technology? I mean, playing-wise, I don't think you've ever really done that much. I don't think any of us have ever really done that much, right?
No, I mean, first for me, I never did that much. No, it was first new to me, too. It's all new stuff, yeah. And so it's going over good, you know, and I like the way it's going, so it's all new to me. So I just try to go along with it and get it right.
You know what I'm curious too, because I mean, you know, you've played with such legends. You're a legend as well. I mean, you played with Muddy, you played with Willie Dixon, you played with, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Plus your own stuff, your 2-time Grammy Award winner. But I know your bread and butter is going out, playing festivals, playing clubs, being in front of people, feeding off that live energy from the audience. What is it like? I mean, how do you prepare yourself when you sit down to play? Because, you know, I mean, you're of that stature when you play. You play with intensity. I mean, it's not like you can't phone what it is that you do. You don't just phone in, you know. So when you're in the basement by yourself or you're doing a live stream, how do you find that energy to get up to that level? Or is it just different? You're just thinking of it differently.
You know, when I play music, I have a great energy with all my music. I don't care if I'm playing with a band or just with me. I play the same way. Same feeling. I keep the same feeling. You know, got everything. You got to do it with a feeling. So I just keep that energy going. You know, and the music guitar. When I put a guitar in my hand, it make me feel good, and I just use my energy. I need a slowing around and dragging it, you know, with energy, feeling, you know, got to get people feeling. If I don't feel it, they don't feel it.
That's right.
So I make myself feel it so people can feel the way I feel. Yeah.
You know, I always am curious because I talk to a lot of different musicians, but when I talk to a musician such as yourself, who's like so accomplished and world renowned and everything, I'm always curious as a musician talking to a musician. And I think this is good for fans and casual music fans to know too. But, you know, when you were first coming up, what was that point, or did somebody ever tell you or something? I mean, to be able to play with a certain amount of intensity and feeling and energy and all that stuff, it doesn't just happen. I mean, you can't just pick up a guitar and say, hey, great, I think I'm going to learn how to play guitar, and then you have it. I mean, it's got to build, and you've got to get better at it and all that stuff. Was there a point in your career where, you know, right when you were first starting out, that you were like, all of a sudden, you were like, okay, this is now I know what it's like to play at this kind of level, this kind of an intensity level every single night and be able to bring it every single night?
Yeah, what you got to do, you can't be nervous. You got to just have confidence in yourself. If you don't have no confidence in yourself, what you're doing, faith, then it ain't going to work. But I got a lot of faith in what I do. And what I do, I know what I'm doing. And I do it with my, like I say, with a feeling. And it's just the way I was brought up. You know, if I'm going to do something, do it. And don't stop until you finish and do it with all your best of your knowledge that you can do it. And that way you can get across to people and give them that feeling about it, you know. It's very important to be that way, because if you don't be that way, you know, you got to be the same way all the time. You know, just don't do it tonight and tomorrow you do a different, you do different stuff, but have the same feeling, man. So that's the way I was brought up, with all that kind of stuff, playing music. You know, when I was learning all by myself and at home and back then. And when I got to Chicago, I was doing the same thing inside the house. My mother would always make me put the guitar down or turn it down or turn it off, because you got to go to work in the morning. So I stopped, but I would turn it down real low and still have that energy. See, I can play the same energy, soft or loud. Don't matter with me. I just got that. It's just in me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the key, isn't it? That's the key. I mean, being able to play at a soft volume but still have that intensity, that's something that I don't think a lot of people understand.
Yeah. And then when you're playing, you don't, a lot of, you know, you don't slow it down. If you go bring it down, that don't mean slow it down. You keep that same energy. Because a lot of musicians, when they bring it down, they tend to slow the beat up and lose that feeling. But me, I bring it down and still have the same feeling. Yeah, you got to keep that punch to it. Yeah.
Who were some of the people? So when you were coming up, I mean, obviously you were started at a young age, but I mean, when you were coming up, especially in the blues, I'm always curious because, I mean, who were you listening to? I mean, what were some of your influences before you got, you know, started even playing live or playing professionally? I mean, who were some of those guitar players you were listening to and trying to copy?
Well, my number one was the man that I had a place playing with, Muddy. I used to listen to him a lot, but I listened to all music back then, you know. And I listened to Howlin' Wolf, Jimmy Reed, Muddy Waters, Lightnin' Hopkins, anything was made back in the 40s and 50s. I would listen to all that stuff because I was born around that time, and I was there when it was all creating.
Yeah.
See, people was creating all that music, and it was good stuff. And I just listened to all music. It wasn't only blues. I listened to rock and roll or whatever came out, country and western. It was all good to me. I got that same feeling from it. So way I did things, you know. Yeah.
That's one of those things that I'm always interested, because, I mean, you know, obviously, and, you know, you and I know a lot of the same musicians. And you know, even when you're talking to different musicians, no matter what genre, you know, you're known as a blues man. But, I mean, that's not the only music you ever listened to, and that's not the only music you ever listened to. So I'm always curious to hear that, because, you know, I don't think anybody would say, oh, well, John Primer's probably listening to Johnny Cash or somebody. And I can't imagine, you know, and you know, vice versa. Johnny Cash is listening to Muddy Waters or John Primer. I mean, you know, that whole crossover. But that to me, all those genres mixing together is your influence, and that helps you create your own voice, isn't it?
Yeah, create my own voice. I learned to be learn what the other musician does, but don't be like, you can't be them. You learn what they do and you use your own feeling. I was told that by old guitar players and things, you know, that, hey, you can't be B.B. King, you can't be Muddy Waters, but learn what they do and learn what I play. This guy that played with Muddy said, learn what I play because I'm not going to be around all life time, so you learn what I play, but you can't be me. You're right, Sammy Lawhorn, that was his name. He played with Muddy Waters 15 years. Mm-hmm. But all Lewis Miles, Dave Miles, Poise, all them guys, I learned from those guys for 7 years at Teresa's Lounge. You know, yeah, I learned from them. Junior Wells, all them guys. I learned. Junior taught me a lot how to be, how to treat musician. Always be great to your musician, be good to them, and treat them fair. You know.
Yeah.
He said you can't make all the money. You got to give them some money too. You know, keep them happy. That's the main thing. Keep the musician happy. That's what I do. Yeah.
Well, that brings up a great point because I was gonna ask you because I know that you played at Teresa's, but I was listening to a documentary, a little 8-minute promo thing that Lisa, your wife, sent over to me, and I've seen it before, but I caught this part. You went to Teresa's. You were actually subbing for somebody, right? When you walked up to play with Junior Wells, you were subbing for somebody that night, and then you ended up playing with him for years and years. Yeah. He didn't even know you were coming, did he?
No, he didn't even know it. It was this guitar player. After that, he went on to play with Willie Dixon. His name was John Watkins, which he played with Willie Dixon for a long time. He got his own thing. But he was the one that gave me the gig down there. And so when I got down there that Monday to play, and I told Junior, hey, Junior, John Watkins told me to come down here and play in his place. And Junior had heard me, I guess, you know, when he at the Peyton Place where I met John at. But Junior was, which was the manager there. So when I told him that, he looked at me and said, well, I don't care. That's all he said. And I played 7 years. He put me in charge of everything.
Yeah. Could you imagine now you're like standing on the bandstand and somebody subs out of your gig and doesn't tell you what's going on. And all of a sudden some guy just shows up and says he's playing with you that night. I mean, you'd be probably like, what are you talking about? But back then, that's kind of how it went, right?
Yeah, and I went and I could hear him. I could hear Sammy Lawhorn, the guitar player. I hear him whistling in the background. Yeah, that guy, he's a bad guy. He can play lead and rhythm and all that stuff at the same time playing. You know, you sound like 2 or 3 guitar players at one time.
So talk a little bit to me because I think it's interesting. I know you went on, you played with Muddy Waters for years and Willie Dixon, and then you play your own stuff. But I'm always interested, before we talk about your own stuff, when you're playing as a sideman, you're joining a legend, right? You're joining these legendary bands. You got to mm-hmm. come in. I mean, they're selling out places. It's packed. You're getting onto the gig. You're walking onto the gig. What was your preparation like? I mean, how did you go about... Because I can't imagine Muddy Waters, maybe I'm completely wrong, but I can't imagine these guys like came out with hardcore set lists all the time and handed you this is what we're doing. So you probably had to learn a lot of tunes to be ready for anything on stage. What was the process that you went through to learn that repertoire to be able to walk in and play with somebody that's so established?
You know why? Because that's what I did. When I was learning guitar, I studied everybody's music, all the blues guys. And so when I got with Muddy Band, I knew all this stuff anyway because that's what I grew up on. And at home, that's all I practiced on. I was sitting on the porch in Chicago, and that's how I learned. I learned all this stuff. Willie Dixon, his stuff, that's just blues, simple blues. Mm-hmm. And so I knew all of it. When I get with them guys, I already knew it. So, because Muddy, he told Willie Dixon that 1979 when we went to Mexico, we come back, and he said, who the young man, he asked him down there, who the young man playing that guitar with you, Willie? He said, that's John Prime. He worked at Teresa. He said, that man know my music. I was already playing it. Yeah.
Well, that's a compliment and a half, right, from Muddy Waters. Man, oh, man. But, you know, so when you get on those bands and you're doing all of that stuff and then you branch out and you go out on your own, how difficult is it for you to break out on your own? Or did you establish your name so well in those other bands that when you went out on your own, you started touring, you already had enough of a name that you could headline and everybody was like, oh, okay, cool. It wasn't just, oh, that's the guy from the Muddy Waters band. That's John Primer. Let's have him. I mean, how did that, what was the process? I mean, you just got out of there, you started doing it.
Well, they like I say, everybody knew me from playing it. People came from all over the world to see me playing down on, you know, so they all knew, they know I know what I play, and they saw me playing, and when I got with Muddy, he knew what I was playing, and they saw me there, and from then on, we toured around the world, and then fortunately, after Muddy got sick and couldn't play more, and I started playing with this old guy named Magic Slim, and he was dropping, and that's who took me around the world, all over the world, everywhere, all over Europe, everywhere. That's how I got real known, and I was making my own way, too, because while I was playing with Muddy, with a Magic Slim band, I was doing my own thing. When he wasn't at the Checkerboard Lounge, we'd be playing, the band be playing. So that's how I got established, you know. I was making way for myself.
Yeah.
Slim made me play, when he made his LP, he made me do two songs on there, on his CD. And that's what got me started.
Nope.
Was the LP then, yeah.
So he must have been a real generous person, too. I mean, if he's telling you and pushing you to do your own thing and you're working for him still, too, I mean, it's kind of a rare thing, isn't it? I mean, because to have somebody really, really push you, he must have seen the talent and knew who you were and really loved the fact of what you were doing and wanted to get it out there under your own name then.
Yeah. Well, I was such a, I guess such a guy, intelligent, nice guy to everybody. I wasn't hard to work with, you know, and, I never gave nobody no hard time. I always, you know, show up, and I wasn't showing up drunk or high, nothing like that. You know, I wouldn't. I never been an alcoholic drinker. You know, smoke cigarettes and stuff. So I never was drunk. I was always together. I kept myself together. And when I got with the band, I was the lead guitar player in Muddy's band, and I was like the rhythm guitar with Magic Slim. But he always gave me a chance to open up three songs before he come up. Yeah. So every show we did all over the world. So he was pushing me.
That's incredible. So let's talk a little bit. Now you've got your Live in the Basement, Down in the Basement, Sunday at 3 to 4 p.m. That's on Facebook and Instagram Live. And then of course Saturday, tomorrow, you're gonna be on Can't Stop the Blues at 9 p.m. Eastern with a meet and greet just before that at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And that's all on Facebook on Can't Stop the Blues. We'll link all that stuff up. But you're also doing something, and I'm bringing this up because it's a good tie-in from what you're talking about as far as you being part of the band and then also Magic Slim pushing you and getting you out in front and doing things, always kind of taking care of everybody in the band. And you're taking care of everybody in your band because of this whole thing with COVID-19 and the fact that all these festivals are canceling and all the clubs are closed. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize the musicians, especially in the summer, it's prime time festival season. So, I mean, not only John Primer, but the band that you play with. I mean, everybody's out of work at this point. So you've got a fundraiser going. So if everybody goes over to facebook.com/john.primer.378. That's his personal Facebook page where they've got a fundraiser going. They're trying to raise $15,000. They're getting close. They're at about 8,000 right now, which is incredible. So I encourage everyone to head over there and donate, because that's going to go back to the band too to kind of help some of these guys keep solvent during this incredible time, right? So talk a little bit about that. I mean, the fundraiser's going well and you're doing these live stream performances, but I know it's tough because you and the band would be out on tour right now.
That's right. We would be out on tour, and these guys, they're at home. They got to pay rent. They got to pay their light bill, gas bill, and all that stuff about food. So they're not working and nowhere to work with no one to work with if we was off. So I'm trying to do my best to keep those guys, you know, with help them out to pay their rent and stuff. I know a lot of guys maybe not doing this for the band, but I'm doing it for my band because my bands take care of me and they're good guys and they really looks out for me and they don't let me do nothing. And so they're real good guys. And so I figure they deserve to make money too while I'm off doing it. I'm helping them to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good thing for me to do this for them. And they appreciate it. They love it. That way I keep them guys from when I get ready to go back out. They'll be ready to play with me. See, you know, because I don't want them saying bad things about, well, he all made all the money and didn't give us nothing.
Right.
That's wrong. You got to share with them, you know. Even when I'm playing tips, when I do my band, I have a tip bucket up there on the stage. They put it up there. I don't get none of that money because it ain't right for me to get that. It goes to the band. When somebody puts something in that tip bucket up there, they split it among themselves. They might give me some extra left sometime. I might make 25 cents, a dollar some extra. But they get the rest, you know, and I think that's more than fair, you know. I don't take none of that money, no.
Well, and it's you know, it's one of those things. I mean, you have a band, and I mean, talk a little bit about how important it is to play with the same guys all the time. I mean, that's when your music really starts to get, you know, organically grow, and you get probably even more creative with even the songs that you're composing, because you need to trust everybody else on the bandstand, right? I mean, you're all feeding off of each other, so that's why it's so important to take care of the guys you're playing with.
Yeah. It's important to try to keep the same guys all the time, because if you keep changing, you got to go something different, because it's hard. It's hard for you to get a new band in and start all, you got to start all over again with those, with the song that you do. And so it's difficult to do this. So you have to go along with them and try to keep them there. And then you can play most anything you want to play when you go on stage. You know, you ain't got to think about it. You just start off on a song. I don't use a song list, just like Muddy. Muddy didn't have a song list. Magic Slim didn't have one. He just started a song off that he know, and we fall in with him. So that's the way I do, you know. I cannot use a song list. I might write one song now that I remember at home when I get working, I'll sing it. And they follow me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, simple, yeah. So that's the way I do it, yeah.
Well, and that allows you to read the audience too, because then you can tell what you should start playing depending on what's going on in the audience too. Cause that's an art form in itself, being able to read the audience and know what the heck to play next. Right.
Yeah. They don't know. See, but see, cause if you play the same thing all the time, you might play most of the song on your show, the same song, but always come up with something new.
Mm-hmm.
They'll know what you're going to play next. Well, he's going to play the same thing next, but they can't never figure me out what I'm going to play. Always got some up my sleeve coming out with something.
Now, before I let you go, I want to make sure everybody goes over to johnprimerblues.com. And, of course, they can pick up the new release, The Gypsy yeah. Woman Told Me, but also all of your merchandise is up there. And I know that you just set up a brand new store, a new, brand new merchandise store. We're going to link all that stuff up so people can get great gifts, right? There's great John Primer gifts available there at johnprimerblues.com. So they should check all of that stuff out. And, of course, they can see you live on Sunday on your Facebook page, 3 p.m. Yeah. to 4 p.m. playing live. And then also tomorrow night, Can't Stop the Blues, 9 p.m. Eastern, and meet and greet at 8:30 p.m. Now, before I let you go, I know I mentioned this to you before we came on live. I'm a history buff. I love Chicago history in general, and I know that you used to go down to Maxwell Street and play on Maxwell Street. And when you go to Maxwell Street now, it's like nothing, even close. No, it's like no. Give me a break. So, what was that like? Because that was one of the first spots when you came to Chicago, isn't it? That you went down to was Maxwell Street.
Was Maxwell Street, because the reason why I went down there, because you could buy bowls and whatever you wanted cheap, them good Maxwell Street Polish sausages and all everything you wanted, you could find it down there. So you could find me down there every Sunday. I don't care. For years, I went to every Sunday. I get down there and go down. Somebody asked, where's John Prime at? Where's John at? They say, well, if you want to find him, go down on Maxwell Street. That's where he is. Every Sunday, I would be down there. If I'm not playing, I used to be down there just walking around. I used to play with this guy down there every Sunday. Can't call Pat Russian. He was like a king of the Maxwell Street.
Really?
His family, you know, we are my band called the Maintainers. We used to go down there. He picked us up, and we used to play with him down there all the time. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was so much fun. You make $40, $50, $40 is most we ever made a piece, you know. But it was a good place to go, and I was so sorry when they got rid of it. They should have just rehabilitated and kept it going, man.
I agree.
It was a history, yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And, I mean, everybody was down there, right? I mean, you walk down the street, you'd see everybody down there.
Everybody. All the musicians. A lot of them got their start down there. All these old musicians. They all was down there jamming. I saw a bunch of them down there. A lot of them down there.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable.
One out, not to play most of them, just to look, to hear the music. Just to hear the music. Yeah.
It used to be a big hang, right? I mean, it was just like everybody was there.
Yeah.
All right, so let's tell everybody they got to go over to the Facebook page, john.primer.378. You got it right there. Go fund my band. There it is. Yeah. And head over to that Facebook page. They're getting close to 15,000. He's raised already almost $8,000, which is incredible because it's only been up a short period of time. So let's get it up to 15,000. Of course, check John out on Sunday, on Saturday, and his brand new release and all of the merchandise at johnprimerblues.com. John, thanks so much for taking a few minutes today. Hopefully you stay safe, you stay healthy, relax, and we'll see you actually live and in person at some point rather than digitally, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Okay, man, and I thank you too so much, man, for putting up this time with me, and be safe, and this goes out to everyone all around the world. Be safe and stay at home, and so we can get on back out there and play some more music.
That's right.
I miss seeing all my fans and all the people. So yeah.
Yeah, and we miss seeing you too. Trust us. So, all right. Thanks, John. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. All right, now have a blessed day.
You too.
All right now.
All right. John Primer, man. You know, I could have talked to him probably for 2 hours. I was trying to limit the amount of questions I was going to ask because, I mean, the history he has is incredible. The stories he could tell is incredible. I thought we heard some pretty good information. I was trying to steer around things to kind of get some of that stuff that I find interesting because, you know, I mean, he's played with everybody, man. Muddy, Willie Dixon. I mean, we could have even gone into, like, he's played with Buddy Guy, played with Derek Trucks. I mean, it's, like, insane who he's played with. But I'm more interested sometimes in just learning about what the process was to get those gigs, because that's interesting stuff. I mean, I'm curious that way. Like, and then you get on the bandstand with Muddy Waters. I knew he didn't have a repertory list. I knew he didn't have a song sheet. So I knew it. But John knew all the tunes. So I was always curious about that stuff. So that was great. Again, head over there. He's getting close to 15,000. $5-$10 goes a long way these days. If everybody pitches in, they'll get to that 15,000 to keep that band through some of this hard time. Because, I mean, you know, nobody is working right now. And this is the big festival's time. And this is the time to do it. So thanks again to John Primer. And we will have him back on in the next couple of months to get another update on him and what he's got coming up. And hopefully once things shake out, we'll be able to see him in person. Now, we got to head over. I'm going to call Dave Katzman here on Skype, and we're going to bring him in for the Blue in Chicago and Beyond Blues update. We decided to do this last rather than first because I was going to have John on. So this works really well. Dave's standing by, and assuming I don't crash my entire system, I should be able to bring him on. Everything will be totally smooth. And Dave's going to pop on, hopefully, any second when he picks up. Let's see what happens here. Dave, are you there? Let's see if we bring him up. Let's see. Well, I can hear you. I can't see you yet. So let's see if...
Hello? Michael?
Yeah, are you there?
Now?
Nope, you're not coming in. Let me try you back in a second. Hello? Maybe we got a bad connection or something. All right, standing by.
Mike?
Yeah, there you are. I can't see you, though. You got your camera settings set up?
Damn it. Oops.
Facebook Live. You can hear me okay, right? Getting dangerously close, folks. So, what's everybody doing this weekend? Hit me up. I should tell you while we're trying to connect here with Dave. Hit me up. Leave us a comment. Like this page if you can. I'm moving everything over now. We're doing it from Chicago Music Revealed on the Facebook page now. So, let me try to reestablish with Dave. Let's see what's happening. So I'm moving everything over to the Facebook Live version, but it's on Chicago Music Revealed. So that's where I'm doing all of the Facebook feed from. It's still cross-posting. We're still on Chicago Jazz Magazine. So everybody that's watching us over there, head over and like Chicago Music Revealed on Facebook. That's where I'm going to be doing everything from. I'll be pushing it out. I've got a whole lot of guests next week, which should be really cool. We've got a a DJ coming back in. We've got somebody that runs a independent music magazine coming on next week, so that should be fun. And a whole lot more to. We've got a couple of national jazz and Latin artists coming on next week, so you know we're branching out. Also, I might have to change the time of the show next week on one day because we're going to be doing drone fly through over at the Epiphany Center for the Arts, which is going to be fun. There he is. I see something there. Hang on a second. Let me bring you up. I can sort of hear. Do you have ear? What do you got cooking? Hey, he's got his Manny's Deli shirt on. All right, hang on a second here. Let me bring you back around. Oh, there you are. All right, I got you. Talk a little bit. I think so. Let me hat one. Wait a minute. Whoa, there's too many of me now. Okay. All right, I can hear you. How's that? I'm muffled. Would you? Yeah, there we go. That's better. There we go. That sounds good. All right, that sounds great, actually. That sounds perfect. All right. How are you, man? How are you doing? I am hanging in there. It was a very long week, and we are at Friday and cranking along here. Just talked to John Primer. Great, you know, obviously legend. You've played with him many a time, and you've known him for years, so that whole thing. But we had a good discussion. I mean, you probably checked it out on the computer. So now we've got the Blues in Chicago and Beyond update for this week.
I want to move into our list like we always do.
Yes.
Last week, we had the Blues Foundation Awards, the Blues Music Awards, and Chicago really represented. We won a bunch of awards. I'm just going to go down the list of Chicagoans and then throw in a couple other people. Shamika Copeland was the hostess, did a great job, but she also won the Contemporary Blues Female Vocalist. Nick Moss, the Nick Moss Band, won 3 awards. Nick has been up for awards at the BMAs for many, many years. Last year, he won 1 award, but this year, he and the band won 3 awards, which was great, which, I mean, just outstanding. And his new album, Lucky Guy on Alligator Records, is a really great album. And another Chicagoan, Albert Castiglia, that played with Junior Wells, actually, won Best Blues Rock Album. And a Chicago royalty, Ms. Mavis Staples, won for Best Female Vocalist. And she deserves all the awards she could get.
Yeah, right. So, talk a little bit about the Blues Music Awards, because where are those? What's the history of them? Just so some of the people that are watching this have an idea, because you know, I think that'd be helpful for some people if they don't know what it is.
Well, that's a good question. The Blues Music Awards are basically the Grammys of blues. It's where the whole blues community gets together, and it's open voting. You have to be a member of the Blues Foundation to vote. But it's a real, for awards function, and it is really honest because it's the people's choice.
Mm.
And it's been, I don't know how many years it's been going, but this year they did it virtually. And you can actually go on YouTube and watch the whole show from this year. A lot of performances, and Warren Haynes and Elvin Bishop and people like that do some announcements. And it's really great. When it happens in Memphis every year in May, first week or two of May. And it's kind of like the blues gathering of the year. We all go down there and see people we haven't seen since the year before and hang out, jam a lot. It's really, really a special thing. And the Blues Foundation also runs the Blues History Museum. And that's something that everybody should check out if they're ever down that way. And I suggest that anyone who's interested do the YouTube and pull up the virtual Blues Music Awards 2020. And
it's
a great thing. Also,
I was gonna say usually it's in person, right? So it was all virtual this year for obvious reasons.
Yes, and in person they throw this big gala And it's about 4 hours long, and everyone performs, and, you know, there's always a tribute to everybody who passed away, you know, a video tribute to it, and it's on the virtual one, too. That's always a bittersweet moment, but it is in person. It's a great show, amazing production, a lot of fun, and you get a good taste for it if you go on the YouTube and see this one from this year, so... Bobby Rush also won, so my friend Bobby.
Yeah, well, Bobby had a rough go of it with COVID-19, but he came out of it, and he's back in business, thank God.
He sure is, and this what a great way to get back in business, winning an award, you know.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
What else you got? What other tidbits we got
Bruce,
here?
Well, you know, one thing, today is Robert Johnson's birthday. He would have been 109 today. Robert Johnson is one of the instrumental people of blues in the United States. He's anybody who knows blues knows Robert Johnson, but today is his birthday. So I just had to give him a shout out. You know, they say he sold his soul to the devil. So I may be giving him a shout out down there, but I choose to believe I give him a shout out up there. But yeah, that's that. Want to also just always bring up two things which you brought up with John. One of them, the Can't Stop the Blues, is a great thing to donate to blues artists who are not able to support themselves, or pay the blues forward is what that was. And Can't Stop the Blues is a performance that has two bands every day that you can donate to. So these are two things online that if you're hungering to hear some good blues and do something good for the blues, reach out to those two. It's really good. Yeah. Can't Stop the Blues and Pay the Blues Forward.
Oh, so that's great.
Two very good things. Which brings me to a little more serious subject. And, you know, this virus, the COVID, has really taken its toll on so many industries and so many industries that are attached to those industries. And, you know, I'll give the government a little bit of credit. They're trying to help small businesses, and they're trying to help, you know, I'm not going to get into it. Talk about the government, please. Not a good idea. We're talking about music. But I have way too much to say about that. But there is two groups that are establishing a way to make the government aware of the struggles of the music industry, one of them being the National Independent Venue Association. Now, this group of people, this has been organized literally for 27 days. It came out of the reality that all the independent venues, all the small to medium venues in the country are in dire, dire straits. Anything from a small blues and jazz club that holds 30 people to maybe like a Metro here in Chicago that holds 3,500 people, or an Aragon that holds 5,000 people. The fact is that all the major touring acts have canceled till 2021. All the medium acts and all the smaller acts, which a lot of jazz and blues is, just are not working, and they have no income whatsoever. But the venues also don't have any income. And the fact is that online you have a lot of musicians of all genres playing and taking donations, and John's raising some money for his band and things. And that's really good. But we all got to kind of look past that, because the truth is, when we're able to get back into public, all the musicians can go back to work. A lot of the venues, unless they get help, will not be there for them to play. Mm-hmm. And that's a real spring thing. I mean, when you think about a venue and you think about all the things around it, like the gas station on the corner, the convenience store across the street from the venue, the Uber and drivers and Lyft drivers that take people to the show, you know, all of it, you know, it's a domino effect. Mm-hmm. And it's so affecting us, but there NEVA, along with a bunch of other groups, and one group that is out of Chicago called the Chicago Independent Venue League, which is our version of NEVA, who is now working with NEVA, are writing a general letter to the Congress. And if I can do anything, I'm asking everybody who sees this to get online and look up the National Independent Venue Association and just sign the letter. It doesn't cost a dime or anything, you know, but in the business we're in, it doesn't run like a grocery store or a clothing store. People work for tips. Musicians work on the road and deal with ticket sales, you know, as to how their income is formed, the revenue chain. It's just it's a hard one, and we've got to help out the venues. That's really all I can say. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I mean, you know, you're preaching to the choir, obviously. We've talked offline about it, but I've talked to a lot of people over the past 30 episodes of this that, you know, a lot of people have to think about this because it's not so much as, yes, the musicians are not working, the staff and the venues are not working, but like a lot of these clubs, a lot of these venues, but most of them don't even own their own property. So they have leases, they have mortgages, they're renting all of their backline equipment, meaning not even the stage equipment, just the catering stuff, the in-house kitchen stuff. Everything's contingent upon getting people through the door and getting as many people through the door as possible on each night and selling alcohol and selling tickets and selling all of these other things. So, you know, the venue associations, and I know I've been reached out to by Civil, which is the Chicago Independent Venue League, about getting involved with them, which absolutely that's going to happen. But, you know, and we know a lot of these guys. We know a lot of these venues. And you know, I've worked for 20 years in the jazz world in Chicago, so I know a lot of them. And I know a lot of the blues venues. And it's not fantasy to think that half to three quarters of these venues, if this continues on, which is probably what's going to happen, are going to have a real tough time reopening. And that's going to be a big loss to the arts community throughout the entire country, let alone to Chicago. So it's important that people go on, sign their name to that list, and make their name known. So, because, you know, as they always say, I mean, you know, stronger in numbers. And if you don't put, if there's millions of signatures coming at Congress, all of a sudden people start going, whoa, wait a minute, we got to figure out some funding for this, because otherwise the entire arts community is going to crash.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a statement. If you go to the page, there's statements from venues talking about their situation. One wrote, raised the point that they were not prepared, but they were kind of able to deal with a 3 to 4 month delay on opening. But the reality of it, with the multiple stage openings to public, you know, 5 stage in Illinois, 5 stage in Chicago, what was 3 or 4 months is now turning into 10 to 18 months for a venue. And like you say, a lot of them are renting their spaces, not to mention their crews that they have to keep on. It's just, there's so many layers to putting on a show that it, you know, everyone has to look at the whole picture. It's a time to support the whole picture. And this is easy to support. All you have to do is do a signature. So I really hope that everyone who hears this will go to the NEVA, National Independent Venue Association page, and sign their name. That's all it takes.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And we'll link all that stuff up in the description. And then also on Instagram TV and everything, we'll put all of that stuff on the Instagram and everything else and push everybody over there. And, of course, on Chicago Music Revealed and ChicagoJazz.com, we'll have everything up there. But, yeah, it's essentially important, and I know that we'll stay on top of this situation and keep giving people updates as things change. And you're right, because the phase opening, you know, phase four is 50 and below. That's the phase four opening is 50 people and under,
right,
for a venue. So just think about that. And then phase five is when everything's open, and essentially there's got to be a vaccine or some sort of standard for treatment that is, you know, making things very simple to get treated. And I don't see that coming for a year at least. So you're right. We've got to keep an eye on this and make sure we can get all these venues somehow supplemented through the federal government in order to stay open. Because this isn't like somebody made a bad business deal. This is completely a different situation. So, all right. Well,
yeah. I've got some other stuff about festivals too, and I was speaking with my friend Victor Thomas, who's one of the main people up at Milwaukee Fest, and they're trying to be open in September, and it's a very brave undertaking. But again, I was talking to them about infrastructure, even down to, you know, when bands load into the back of the stage, how do you keep your stage crew 6 feet away from each other? How do you, you know, a truck comes in from Georgia with 10 guys on it, or 10 guys in the bus who help unload the truck, and then you got 10 guys on stage. Here you got interstate mingling of germs, you know. That's just on stage. Yep. What about the audience? You know, you've got a 3,000-seat auditorium. Do you put everyone seats apart, or what do you do? And then what do you do with the bathrooms? You need a guy in there cleaning it the whole time the venue's open. There has to be, you know, guys wiping down the bathroom all the time. These are costs. There's also a new machine called the Tauri, and it looks like an iPad, mm-hmm. and it mounts on a stand, and you walk up to it, and it reads your temperature. And every venue is going to have one or something like that. This happens to be the one I've been made aware of. And they're not cheap. They're $4,500 a piece.
Sure.
So say you got three entrances. You know, that's a lot of money, especially for a venue that hasn't been open for 8 months. It's a hard one. I don't really know. I honestly don't.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's going to be real difficult, and it's going to be difficult to imagine any sort of festival opening up or any sort of thing happening in the fall or in September or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know. All right. Hey.
I honestly don't see it happening this year.
No, I don't either. All right. We're starting to lose your connectivity. I don't know why, but we're starting to lose you. But this was a good blues. So blues in Chicago and beyond. Of course, if anybody has any info that Dave needs to know about, leave a comment. Send us a message, hit him up on Facebook, Dave Katzman, and
or Straight Arrow Info. Straight Arrow Info is good too.
Yes,
Gmail.
Yes. And you know, this has been good. I'm digging these hits. I think we're giving a lot of good information. We're covering a lot of ground, and we're keeping people up to date on a very important scene in Chicago, which is the blues scene. So I mean, this is stuff people need to know, and there's nowhere else to find it out other than on Dave Katzman's Blues in Chicago and Beyond update here every Friday afternoon, 4 p.m. ish.
Next week, I hope they have your theme together for you. The lead-in music.
There you go. There you go. All right, Dave, okay. Thanks for jumping on. We'll see you next week.
Sounds great, Mike. Take it easy, everyone. Stay healthy.
Katzman. All right, that was good. I'm glad he brought that stuff up because, you know, it's very important that we support all of these local venues and the national independent venues because, you know, we could open back up in a year and have three clubs in Chicago. Literally. I'm not kidding. It could be down to that. So I think everybody's got to take an interest in signing things, pushing it out there, getting things out to the government, and pushing the issue to a certain point where we can get some notice going and get some help into these independent venues. So, all right. Well, thank you to everybody. Thanks again to John Primer for joining us in the first segment. And thanks again for Dave Katzman. Great update as usual. Thanks again for you for watching episode 30. Can you believe it, man? We're going to be moving into 31 on Monday. There may be a programming note on Tuesday or Wednesday because we're going to be doing some aerial footage over at Epiphany, which I'll actually be able to probably share with you at some point, which will be pretty cool. So that'll be fun. So I might have to adjust the time slot on Tuesday or Wednesday next week. But Monday, we will be back here, and I'll be announcing all of the guests over the weekend. So be sure to hit us up. Be sure to like this page, Chicago Music Revealed on Facebook. And then also head over to chicagomusicrevealed.com for all of the past shows. The podcast is up there. You can subscribe to that. All that good stuff. We're going to be moving into episode 31. We're doing it Monday through Friday here every single day, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. ish. And I thank you all. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. stay healthy. And as I always say, hopefully we will see you somewhere in person. But if not, I know I'll see you back here on Monday, right here on Chicago Music Revealed. Stay safe. We'll see you at the next broadcast.